The one bit that knew my laptop was dying. At 1:03 in the morning, my laptop turned itself off. I was upstairs in bed. The machine had two power cables attached, a big barrel charger and a USB-C cable, and it still ran its battery down to 2% and shut down. The next morning it would not boot at all. That turned out to be a separate problem, which is a story for another day. This post is about the first question. How does a laptop know it has power, and why did mine get it so wrong? The answer took me from a file you can read in one command, all the way down to the laptop's own firmware code. Along the way, I found out that the operating system was never told the thing I most needed to know. Layer 1 is the file that tells you almost nothing. Linux keeps hardware information in a fake file system called sys. It looks like ordinary files and folders, but nothing is really on disk. Reading a file runs a bit of kernel code that goes and asks the hardware. Power lives in a folder called power supply. My laptop has two entries there. One is the battery, the other is the charger. The important file is named online. It holds a 1 when the laptop has outside power and a 0 when it does not. That sounds like exactly what I needed. It is not, and here is why. My laptop has two ways to take in power. There is the barrel plug, the fat round one that carries 330 watts. There is also USB-C, which on this model tops out at 65 watts. Both of them feed the same charging chip inside. The online file reads 1 if either source is working. It cannot tell them apart. So, on the night everything went wrong, that file could not have told me whether the barrel plug had quit because USB-C was still there to hold the value at 1. There is a second trap. The battery reports how much current is flowing in a file called current now. When the battery is full, charging stops, and that file reads 0. So the number goes silent at exactly the moment you want to check on things. Two files, and both of them were useless for the question I had. Layer 2 is ACPI, where firmware ships you code. ACPI is a set of tables the manufacturer builds into the machine. They tell the operating system what devices exist, and they include small programs the system can run to ask about them. Those small programs are the interesting part. Firmware ships actual code, and Linux runs it. My laptop declares two power devices this way, a charger and a battery. The charger has a method named PowerSource. When you read that online file, Linux runs the PowerSource method and hands you whatever it returns. So that method decides what the file says. The question becomes, what does it look at? You can find out, because the tables are readable. Three tools that already ship with Ubuntu will pull the firmware out of your own running machine and turn it back into something close to source code. That gave me a 57,000-line file. Layer 3 is the embedded controller. Every laptop has a small chip called the embedded controller. It is a tiny computer that runs whenever the machine has any power at all, even when the lid is shut and the system is off. It watches the charger, runs the fans, handles the keyboard backlight, and talks to the battery. The main processor asks it questions. It is the part that actually knows. The embedded controller keeps its state in 256 bytes of memory. Not files, not a protocol, just 256 bytes. Every fact about power on my laptop lives somewhere in there. Linux can show them to you through a debug interface. Two notes on that. The module that exposes it loads read-only by default, and you should keep it that way because writing random bytes to the chip that controls your battery is a bad idea. And this only works because someone decided to expose it. Nothing here is a documented, promised interface. Now for reading the firmware's own map. The decompiled firmware includes a map of those 256 bytes. Field names in order, with their sizes in bits. At byte 48, the first bit is the keyboard backlight. Then three unnamed bits. Then, at bit 5, a field the firmware calls BTST. That is the one. It is set only when the barrel plug is delivering power. USB-C never sets it. That is the single bit that could have answered my question, and it was sitting there the whole time. Notice what shares that byte. The keyboard backlight and the power source are neighbors, one bit apart, in the same 8 bits of memory. There is no reason for that beyond whoever laid out the firmware needing somewhere to put them. There is a second useful bit in the same byte, at position 6. It is set whenever any source is feeding the laptop, barrel, or USB-C. That one is not in the firmware map at all. The map stops naming fields after bit 5. I found it the same way I found the first one, by dumping the memory with the charger in, dumping it again with the charger out, and comparing. Put the two bits together and the byte answers the whole question. Both clear means nothing is feeding it and it is running on battery. Bit 6 alone means it is powered, but not by the barrel, so it is on USB-C. Both set means the barrel plug is delivering. I also found what the power source method really reads. It is a different field at a different byte, and it is the ambiguous one. It is set for the barrel plug or for USB-C without distinction, and that is the value that becomes the online file. So the firmware knows which cable is feeding the laptop. It just never tells the operating system. No ACPI method reads the barrel bit. The only way to see it is to go around ACPI entirely and read the chip. There was also a blind spot I did not expect. Modern USB-C charging has its own kernel subsystem. It is supposed to expose the power deal that got negotiated. How many volts, how many amps with the charger offered. On my laptop, 3 of those drivers are loaded, and the folder they published to is empty, 0 ports registered, so Linux can tell me nothing at all about the USB-C side. That is why the second bit matters so much. It is a yes or no, and a yes or no is everything I have. If you want real numbers for USB-C on a machine like this, the system will not give them to you, and you need a meter that sits in the cable. Next, the driver, and a message that looks like an error. Acer laptops load a driver for vendor extras. It also prints a line about an unknown function number, and that line shows up in the system log every time you plug or unplug a charger. That looks like something broke. It did not. Firmware can send the operating system a notification when hardware changes, and this firmware sends event number 9 whenever the power source changes. The driver simply has no case written for number 9, so it logs the number it does not recognize and moves on. Which means it is a free, time-stamped log of every power change, sitting in your system log, disguised as an error. On my machine, it matched the exact second the power switched over. Here is the part I did not expect at all. The cable cannot introduce itself. Some laptops can identify their charger. Dell put an extra pin in the middle of their connector, and a small chip inside the charger reports its wattage over that pin. Plug in the wrong charger and the laptop tells you so. My barrel plug is 5.5 millimeters across. It has 2 conductors. Positive on the inside, ground on the outside. That is all. There is no third pin, so there is nothing to say anything with. I searched the whole 57,000-line firmware dump for any field holding an adapter wattage or an adapter type. There is none. The laptop cannot tell a 330-watt charger from a 90-watt one. It sees voltage on a pin and starts drawing current. That is fine when everything works. It also means the machine has no way to warn you that the power coming in is not enough for what you're asking it to do. And the numbers here are unkind. 330 watts at 19.5 volts is about 17 amps, through a barrel connector smaller than a pencil eraser. Any bad contact in that path turns into heat. Heat makes the contact worse. Worse contact makes more heat. Layer 4 is the part that actually turned it off. One more piece sits above all of this, and it is the piece that pulled the trigger. A service called UPower watches the battery and acts on policy. Mine was set, by default, to take action at 2%. Hibernating was turned off as too risky. With hibernation ruled out, the fallback action is to power off. So at 2%, that service did precisely what it was configured to do. The clean shutdown I found in the logs was not a crash and not a failure. It was the operating system, saving my file systems on the way down, correctly, while every layer beneath it still believed the machine was plugged in. That is the whole shape of the problem in one sentence. The policy engine at the top was making a good decision, using a value from the bottom that could not tell 2 very different situations apart. So, what did I actually build? Knowing about those 2 bits turned an unanswerable question into a one-line answer. A small service copies the controller bytes to a readable file once a second, so ordinary programs can look at them without special permission. A second script decodes the two bits and writes one line to a log, but only when something changes. A status bar module reads the same two bits and colors, an icon. That log is why I can tell you what happened at 1 in the morning, not a reconstruction, not a guess. A timestamp record showing that for the whole slide from 45% down to 2%, the laptop had no power coming in at all, from either cable, while both sat plugged into it. Everything above the chip agreed the machine was fine. Only the bits nobody reads knew otherwise. The scripts are on my GitHub, along with two diagnostic tools that helped me separate a failing laptop jack from a failing charger. If you want to try this yourself, the tools are already on your machine, and nothing here needs installing. You can read what the operating system thinks, you can grep the system log for every power change since boot, you can decompile the firmware's own map of the chip, and you can dump the raw bytes. Your bytes will be at different offsets. Field names differ by vendor and by model, and mine were found by dumping the memory twice, once with the charger in and once with it out, and then comparing. It took about 10 minutes. The lesson I keep relearning is that the cheap, direct measurement usually exists, and I usually reach for it last. I spent hours on clever theories about what killed that laptop. The answer was two bits, 1 second at a time, in a log I had already written.